Good afternoon, everyone. You are listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz, or is it actually a robot in a costume dressed as Scotty Hertz? Or is that a too obscure a reference? Did you hear about the Russian guy who's like, they thought it was a robot and was actually a guy in a suit?
I thought that was about Mike Pence. Oh!
Mike Pence the android. He was shorting out the other night, wasn't he?
Yeah, he sure was. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Jesus can't save you from desperately uncomfortable meetings with Congress.
Yet.
Oh, good point. Okay, we're off to a good start, mocking
religion.
Yeah,
yeah.
Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen, and you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast from Podbean, as well as iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Today, we're going to revisit Brexit as Theresa May has survived one confidence motion and is now off to Brussels to get a deal no one wants to make. So there's that. And then the effects of the opioid crisis are definitely being felt here in Guelph. Donnie Hay is trying to do his part to rally support to create a medical detox center here in Guelph. And we'll be talking to him about the benefits of the center and the challenges getting it going. And then finally, censored music at Christmas. Scotty's mad about it, or maybe he's happy about it.
I guess we'll wait and talk about it.
Stay tuned. That's a stay tuned and a half. But first, the Yellow Jackets, or the Gilets Jaunes, or the Yellow Vests, however you like. We're not talking about insects, of course. We're talking about protesters in France. And that's actually been exported all over Europe and even in Alberta last weekend, this Yellow Vest movement. But in the streets of Paris the last 4 weekends, there's been demonstrations, some violence, 4 people have been killed, hundreds injured, stuff set on fire. It all seemed to start with French President Emmanuel Macron. It actually didn't start with him, but it definitely, he didn't help the situation. This is where it gets sort of tricky, where it's sort of like the 2 minute typical like TV news pieces don't really give a situation justice. You have to sort of pour through like 7 or 8 articles to get the full picture of what's going on with this whole movement. But a lot of it's like sort of been steamed down to that this was a protest about carbon taxes and high taxes on diesel and gas in France. That's not even half the story. A lot of it has to do with the fact that Macron passed sweeping tax cuts to corporations and the ultra wealthy in France. And I wrote some of these other things down because Macron went on TV this week and said, "Okay, we're gonna fix things
from his golden office.
Chill out, everybody. We're gonna totally
gold desk.
We're gonna deal with all the stuff you're mad about." So there was gonna be a tax starting in January on overtime hours. So that's cool, you know. You work overtime, and Macron's like, "Yeah, we'll tax you for that." And there was also going to be a tax hike on pensions under 2,000 euros a month. So, I mean, this is like kind of the diabolical, you know, neocon capitalist stuff that, you know, happens on the stage. Because part of his rationale for this was saying, like, France needs to be competitive in a global market. And it's like, where have we heard that before? That you have to cut taxes for the rich to be competitive in the global market. It's...
And what we
shocker
as these protests have gone on, as you mentioned, Alberta, it's kind of morphed into something else, and that people are kind of applying what they want to it now. And I did see one editorial, I think it was on the CBC, it definitely was on the CBC, about how, you know, this is exactly the same as Trudeau and the carbon tax. It isn't. You can't boil it down to that. It's as you said, it's a bit more intense than that. It's very interesting. It's one of these, I guess we call it horizontal style, where it's kind of like everybody is so pissed off, we're going to do this. It kind of evolved organically. There really are no leaders, and this is the kind of protest that worries everybody when they can't point to somebody and say, you know, arrest them, they're the other ones behind it. It's like Everybody in France has a yellow vest in their car for safety reasons when the car gets stuck by the side of the road.
Yeah, that's a law, right?
Yeah, you're supposed to put it on. So, this is their way of saying, we're just generally regular people being taxed to the hilt. I found with this story, I kind of had to go to the source. I think I'd mentioned before that I was kind of working on, trying to bring back a level of French comprehension in my own mind. So I was following, I've been following a couple of French websites, but also the European sites have this a bit better covered because it's actually bled into Belgium as well, right? The part of Belgium have sort of taken this. It's spread, like I said, fairly organically. And some of the stories I was watching too, would be like, here's people camping out at a roundabout and sort of giving information to people, and the police had come by and wouldn't bother them. I think that it's, the protests in Paris, and man, I mean, did the French know how to protest in the street, right?
Yeah.
We're just going to take all these chairs and make a barricade like it's 17 whatever again. Did you see Les Mis? It was like Les Mis, but this is the largest protest in France since the almost revolution of 1968. But one of the key differences that from now to then is that generally the protest in 68 came from the left, started with the students and then sort of spread to the workers and then kind of fizzled out as these things do. This one has still got quite a bit of momentum and sounds like it's getting bigger every weekend. Like you said, it's gone a bit global. And Marcon did make some concessions from his Golden Desk speech about raising the minimum wage. I think the tax cut for the retirees is going to happen. And what was the other thing? He asked businesses to give workers tax-free year-end bonuses. He didn't legislate it. He just asked them, which probably means it won't happen. I would think if you're going to get on TV and it's supposed to be one of the most watched things on television ever in France. If you're going to get on TV and do that, you probably shouldn't do it from the Gilded Palace. You don't have to do it from behind like a hostage curtain or something holding up a newspaper. It's more like, a bit of restraint would have helped, but maybe. I don't think it would. It's still the Gilets Jaunes are not happy.
No.
And there seems to be no resolve. It's going to take more than just, well, we're going to raise the minimum wage. We're going to do this. Although, I mean, it sort of proves that when you do have a group like this together, that things can happen. But of course they want more.
Well, they studied the demands. And it was like two-thirds of the positions were close to positions the list of 42 bands, two-thirds of them were close to positions of the radical left, a third were close to positions on the right-hand side. This is a big cross. If there's one thing that the far left and the far right have in common is that they hate the rich. Or they say they hate the rich. So you look at it in the United States, who's their hero, the guy who lives in a 66-story tower with his name on it.
Yeah.
But one of the signs, and I read this in a National Post piece that was actually pretty good at explaining the whole carbon, it's not about the carbon tax, even though it kind of is, piece, which I found very informative, that there are people with banners and with phrases, this phrase on their jackets, make the rich pay for environmental transition,
mm-hmm.
which it seems to be that a lot of the yellow vest protesters are people who live in the rural areas, so they get around with their own car or vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
They heat their homes with diesel or petrol. When the gas tax goes up by 10 cents for diesel or 4 cents for gas, that does hit them where they live. Meanwhile, Macron's cutting taxes for the rich. He's, taxing benefits. And a lot of these demands, I'll read some of them. Repealing taxes on the taxes for the wealthy, repealing the tax cuts, promoting goods on rail, which I guess could theoretically help have an effect on gas prices if you're not using so much gas to transport things.
Mm-hmm.
Ending outsourcing, which is means over there what it means here. Limiting fixed term contracts for contract workers, because there's a lot of that in France, like there's a lot of that here in North America, where people are on contract year to year to year instead of having a full-time position that would see them gain benefits and raises over a period of time. A maximum salary is one of the demands of 15,000 euros a month. That we've heard about minimum basic income. This is saying there should be a maximum basic income. Proportional representation is another one.
Really?
no further privatization of French infrastructure. And I think this is sort of where the more right-hand side of things, you know, on the one hand, it's fair treatment for asylum seekers. And on the other hand, there's provisions for more integration for people immigrating to France, to integrate them into French society. So learning French and becoming, you know, part of the French society by learning the traditions and things, which I don't think is unreasonable, because one of the big problems with racial animus in Europe is that there is no melting pot like there is in North America. I mean, there's a couple of ways you can take that. Yes, everyone should sort of know what it's like to belong to a greater community made up of diverse people. You know, the more Marie Le Pen side of the things, you should be saying, like, you're in France, you'd be French, which, you know, can be one of the other ways that can be taken, of course. But
yeah, so across the board, it's a ton of issues. It's not just, you know, like you said, the fuel tax being one of the highest. I watched a bit with a couple. I think he was a trades of some kind, maybe a plumber, and his partner, I'm not sure what she did, but they had them at home, and they were quite literally, it's like, okay, we've got these two lights. Sometimes we leave that one on. We very rarely have both of them on.
Yeah.
We monitor our heat closely. And these people, it wasn't, you know, this was a legitimate, it wasn't the fix was in kind of thing. It wasn't fake news. This was genuine. And there was another one with the Gilets Jaunes at a toll booth, and they had lifted the arms up of the toll booth, and they were letting everybody drive through, but they were collecting the tickets. And again, it's another one where the police came, and the police just let them do it. I mean, yeah. I consider some of the stuff that's gone on there. I mean, this is one of the key differences. If you tried that here, they'd just haul you in.
Oh, yeah.
And in the States, they'd probably start shooting at you, right? And be like, yeah, get off the road. It's like, no, this is so. There does seem to be some sympathy from the authorities in some areas, obviously not in the. Because when they always say protests have turned violent, because it's generally the cops start beating on people, you know, depending on your. Where you draw a line in terms of violence, you know, there's the smashing of the shop window, but then there's like, you know, you're beating heads. They're totally different things. And I think in France, they expect a certain amount of burning tires, which isn't good for the environment either. Let's be realistic about it. I think it was that the past weekend, there was 2,000 people arrested. Whether charges or anything will stick, it's just a matter of, like any protest, they haul people in and kind of let them go the next day. Just so they're, you know, to calm the situation, let's say. And then, of course, Trump chimed in, right? Trump was trying to say that it's all about the Paris Agreement and how terrible it is. He probably couldn't be more wrong. I mean, I'm sure there are probably some yellow vests.
I think he could be more wrong.
Yeah, he could be more wrong. Well, at least, I mean, in this particular situation. There could be some yellow vests that maybe think it's about the climate accord, but probably not very many. It's ironically the Paris Accord, so like they're in Paris. It must be about the Paris Accord because it's in Paris. Yeah. So where is this going to go is the burning question, I guess. And I mean, I don't think it's
pun intended.
Yeah, I don't think anything's going to happen with it in Alberta. I think it was just sort of a bit of a pop-up thing. It's not this mass.
The thing in Alberta.
Let's overthrow Notley. It's Notley.
In Alberta was like 200 people, and they were ticked off about the carbon tax, and they were ticked off about the UN migrant pack, which has been this new thing that people on the alt-right are ticked off about. The UN is telling us how many migrants we have to take.
Don't tell me there was QAnon people there as well.
Oh, no doubt. but I think the important thing to remember, too, is in comparing carbon taxes, the carbon tax that Trudeau is proposing is not as high as the one in France. Of course, people who know will point out that Trudeau is using the targets set by the Harper government, which are not the targets that the Paris Agreement is aiming for. So,
and there's exemptions. And
yeah. So, but the flip side of it is, too, is that according to the government, 90% of the revenues from the carbon tax are going to be then reinvested in the form of the tax credits and the
rebates
to people. Whereas the carbon tax in France is going into the debt. Macron's putting it into the debt. So, one is going to help people. One, you know, I guess helps people in a more existential way, but you don't typically feel the effect of paying down the debt on your own pocket.
And that's if you're paying. Could you imagine people here if they were asked to pay $3 a liter, $3 Canadian a liter for gas, petrol, diesel, whatever you want to call it?
If it goes over a dollar, maybe not over a dollar now, but over $1.20, people start to freak out.
Because diesel used to be cheap everywhere, and it's gone up, and that's one of the key things in France as well, because a lot of the cars are diesel. And they're tiny. They're tiny. They've got like 1 liter engine cars.
Yeah, nobody's driving a Hummer.
There's no F-150s in Paris. There might be one.
No one's got a Hemi.
No, you just don't see it.
I don't know what the difference is.
It's like Lego cars, but yeah, the difference is like a 5.7 versus a 1. Anyway, we can talk cars at some other point. But
same area, different department. Brexit is back in the news because they were going to have a vote on the 500-some-odd-page Brexit deal reached between the government of the UK and the European Union. That was supposed to be on Tuesday night, but Theresa May had a revolt in her own caucus. Her reign as leader was put to a confidence motion in the Tory caucus. She managed to win, but had to concede that she will not be the leader of the Conservative Party when the next election happens in 2022. So it's a victory-ish. She only lost 37% of her caucus, which I think if this was maybe a Canadian party, she would be in serious trouble. This was almost Tom Mulcair numbers.
Yeah.
Because remember, Tom Mulcair had to step down after getting just over 60%.
Yeah, it's I think the vote went the way it did because before they went in on, it was Tuesday as well, wasn't it? The way it works there is a certain amount of letters have to go to the party, and then there's a tipping point, I think it's like 49, something like that. And then they have this, well, not secretive meeting, but they take care of it sort of behind closed doors. The 1922 committee, it sounds a bit, I'm not even sure what the heck that means, but it's their committee that decides, you know, who's the leader or who isn't. In May's case, she survived, but before the vote, she said, as you said, she wasn't going to be the leader. I think she said post-Brexit talk. So it may even, you know, if the Brexit goes through, because we're still not there yet. So much happened in the past 48 hours on this because that vote was supposed to happen in the parliament in terms to approve the deal. It became clear that she didn't have enough support, even not just the other parties that don't support it, but even within her own party. I think it was like there was 100 MPs saying, we're not going to vote for this. That was when came down to, and that happened, but also the test of her leadership as well. And she was doing all kinds of popping around Europe, and she was supposed to go to Ireland because this is one of the key things, the backstop, and we've talked about it before, that this agreement is going to have a special provision for Ireland, hard border or soft border. It sounds like the border is going to be soft to start off with. And then they're not sure. They're just sort of kicking it down the road. How did Ford put it about the goalposts? He didn't say moving the goalposts. He's like, they replaced the goalposts. I don't know. I don't know if there are any goalposts anymore in Ireland. So this is problematic. And it's really not about any one issue. I think there's lots of unhappiness in many areas about the agreement. But Ireland is one of the key ones because we have 10. Is it 10 MPs, the DUP, propping up this government, which is another thing that could happen too. They could just say, you know what, we're done, government falls, and then they have an election.
Yeah.
So there's lots of the potential things are...
Well, theoretically, the Queen could ask Corbyn if he could form a coalition.
Yeah, well, there's that too.
Yeah.
So there's lots of scenarios. But in terms of Brexit, it's like, is it going to be hard? Is there going to be no deal, which would be probably the worst case scenario for the UK?
Yeah.
Is there going to be a second vote? It looks like they're trying to renegotiate, but most of Europe, there's some footage of the Austrian PM just laughing or something?
Like, I don't know about that.
There's going to be no.
Somebody was talking to the Luxembourg Prime Minister, Xavier Bettel, and they were like trying to get him to talk, like to waver, because everybody, including Macron, including Bettel, everyone's like saying, no, we're not going back to negotiate this. This is the deal.
You've got your 600 pages now. Right. Get out.
Yeah, basically.
Right.
And so this English reporter is like pressing him on it, and he eventually says, like, Brexit was your choice, not mine. like, straight up.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, this is a crisis of England's own making.
I love how you say England, because it pretty much is. But yeah, England and
well,
Wales.
Well, no, I mean, rural England and Wales were kind of the leading Brexiteers. Scotland, Ireland, and the more metropolitan areas of England remain.
It's funny, because I was watching the American feed on this a bit, and they just say the Brits.
Right.
The Brits. What are the Brits thinking? And the woman in London, honestly, this was the report. She said, well, the pound's dropped, so things are cheaper now, so you should come over and have a nice Christmas holiday. Honest to God, that was the analysis. I won't say what station. It wasn't CNN.
Oh, really?
And it obviously wasn't Democracy Now. But I won't say who it was, but it was like, this is your wind-up on this? So you can kind of see why I don't watch that too much.
Good times.
If at all. But it was funny. I thought it shouldn't be funny. It was funny.
Yeah. Well, it's not funny.
No, it's
because
not funny at all.
The whole thing with the backstop is they don't want a hard border between the Irelands, because that comes with a certain set of complications, not the least of which is the Good Friday Agreement.
Yes. Of 97? Is that right? Back in 96?
97, 98?
Anyway, 20 plus years ago. It's one of the key things that's keeping
peace.
Ireland separate, yeah, peace. I was going to say separate but together, but in terms of, yeah, it's a different world than it was.
But the flip side is, because Northern Ireland wants to be in the EU, and the EU has different trade regulations than what's being proposed in the Brexit, you know, there's going to be a bit of friction there. And the backstop is, like, even if there is no deal, that the however it works out, the backstop is going to allow the continued free flow of goods between mainland Europe and Northern Ireland.
They said they were going to use technology. It's like, oh,
but
okay.
Yeah, but May goes in there and says, like, hey, can we like put like a deadline on the backstop? And the EU's like, no. I think people keep hoping that the UK is going to pull their head out of their ass. And
yeah, good way to put it.
And this is where I was reading an editorial in The Guardian that there's also this friction going on between parliamentary due diligence and the government heavy-handedness on this, because people aren't just mad about the deal. People are mad that Theresa May's like, we're going to have a vote on the deal, and then she yanked it. I don't think, you know, we've seen a lot of stuff here in Canada, no matter which party's in charge of, like, a very heavy PMO exercising a lot of power and authority to whip votes and things. We're kind of used to that over here. That's not quite the same thing in the UK.
No.
Where they put a lot of stock and authority in the parliamentary tradition. So if you say we're going to have a debate and we're going to have a vote, you freaking have the debate and the vote. You don't do this like, oh, I know I'm going to lose this vote, so I'm going to yank it. You don't do that. Which brings me to my own sort of analysis on this is Theresa May was Remain. She was one of the Remainers, which is why a lot of people in her party were skeptical about her negotiating this all along. She's a Remainer. Everybody knows this is impossible. You are not going to get a deal where you can have cool Irish relations, where they're going to live happily ever after. That border is going to remain open and free while Britain, while the rest of UK exercises its own sovereignty against the EU. People in the UK want to be able to export and have the business benefits of working with the EU while at the same time not having to import things and not having to send money to Brussels for EU policy and not having to obey those things. You can't have all those things together at the same time. So May knows her time is limited. She knows her time is up. She knows that nobody looking across from her with like laser eyes wants
and
this.
And from behind her as well.
So why doesn't she just say, enough is enough. The slim majority of people wanted us to do this. It can't happen. It can't happen the way you want. This is ridiculous. It's getting out of hand. We're flushing our economy down the toilet because, you know, even if the worst case scenario doesn't come to pass with a hard Brexit, Britain's already suffered in terms of their growth. They went first top of growth in EU to bottom of growth in EU. Mm-hmm. Just end it. Just end it, Theresa May.
Exactly. Pull the plug. and obviously that's another option too that may still happen. Remains to be seen. But
EU court said they could pull the plug anytime.
Sure, why not? You could just rescind Article 50. It's like, okay, no, you know what, guys? We had our little, wild weekend. Nah, we're going to stay. Because the referendum was non-binding. If it was binding, you'd say, well, okay. But it's like, well, and that's another thing, too. There are quite a few people calling for what they're calling the people's referendum. It's like, okay, have a referendum on the deal.
Right.
As it stands, it's like, okay, do we really want this? Because, not to draw on the left and right divide too much, but there was a right-wing protest in London this weekend that got shouted. It was Tommy Robinson, the usual clowns, right?
Good old Tommy
exactly,
Robinson.
Exactly, but there was like, they're calling...
I didn't know he was out of jail.
They're calling Theresa May a traitor. And
who's she treason?
No, well, this is the thing, though. So it's like the left aren't happy, the right aren't happy. It's like she sold us out. And I think because they're all for the hard Brexit. The way this deal is now is that they want, as you said, all of the things. They want free or free-ish trade with the European Union. They want to still have this relationship. It's kind of like the relationship that Norway has with the EU, but that evolved separately and over time. And they were speaking to, I don't know, it was a Norwegian MP or something, and a conservative as well. And she didn't sound like your typical conservative. She's like, no. Like, this is, it's kind of like, this is our deal. You're going to wreck it for us if you do this. Why don't you come up with your own thing? So I'm giving you an abbreviated version, obviously, right? But it's this kind of back and forth isn't really helping anyone. But like you say, it's either the best thing for them at this point may be to pull the plug and then...
And I think if you go back to 2016, when we were talking about this after the referendum happened, we were talking about how this was magical thinking on the part of people there that they were going to have this referendum, they're going to get out of the EU, all the problems would be solved.
I want Britain to be great again. You see all
right.
that.
Right. And what we've learned in the meantime is, no, all your problems are not going to be solved. You're shooting yourself in your economic foot. We know that Russia was dicking around in the referendum.
No question.
We know that there was a bunch of spurious lies in the referendum about how all the money that goes to the EU was going to be reinvested into national health. That hasn't come to pass. But I think the most damning thing about all of this is, after the referendum, you saw all these hard Brexiteers, all these people like Nigel Farage of UKIP suddenly get out of the way. Like
he left the European Parliament that he complained about so much,
right,
but paid his bills. Yeah.
They still make noise from time to time, but they took themselves out of the process, which tells you everything. It's like,
really?
This thing I've worked for my entire life, getting this country out of the European Union.
I'm done.
Yeah, we've got everybody to agree with it, but we're not going to take part any further. So just like Theresa May, end it.
Let's wreck the party and then take off.
I mean, you're going down anyway.
And he left UKIP too, right? Isn't that right? He just sort of like...
It's crazy.
He's going the speaking circuit. It's far more lucrative, right? So.
How? We'll never know because I can't imagine...
I can't wait till we're on the speaking circuit, Adam. Or at least
I know.
You.
We should get on the speaking
circuit.
I'll come
see you. We should have a little talk somewhere. Do what we do here, but out somewhere where there's cocktails or something. I don't know. Anyway.
That may be coming soon. We'll see.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to take a break, and we're going to get Donnie Hay on the phone, and we're going to talk about medical detox centers and how we can help treat Guelph's opioid crisis, or our little corner of the opioid crisis, because it is geographically insignificant, because it's affecting the whole country is what I'm getting at. But anyway, we're going to talk to Donnie Hay, and then we're going to talk about Christmas music, because it's that kind of day. You're listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
That was the Humanity Quartet, new into the station. I believe they're from Vancouver. The album is called Humanity, and that song was, I believe, called A Whole New You. So a little bit of dab-a-da-dat for a winter's day. So trying to bring some. It's like dark at 4 o'clock today. My God. Did you see this?
It was dark all day. It was it was like living north of the wall with all the fog. And
it's okay. In a week,
that's a Game of Thrones reference.
In a week, it's going to start getting brighter, so. Sounds like a weather report, but anyway.
Halfway through the dark. Yes, we do have a guest on the line. Let's get to our guest. His name is Donnie Hay, and he is an activist looking to create a medical detox center in Guelph. And he has a petition going, and it has gotten a lot of support. And indeed, a lot of people are looking for new and creative ways to deal with addiction, mental health, and the opioid crisis here in town. And we are pleased to have Donnie with us via the telephone. Donnie, how are you today?
I'm doing very well, guys. How are you?
We are good.
Great, thanks.
Yeah. So first of all, Donnie, for people who don't know you, can you talk about your background and why you are pushing for to get a medical detox center in Guelph?
Okay, I'm pushing for one because I've noticed that in the last 6-7 months to a year, a lot of people were dying of drug overdoses unnecessarily.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing in Guelph, nothing that can help. And being a recovering drug addict myself, I understand that I didn't want to leave town to get better.
Mm.
And it's scary. And something needs to be done here. Something. Whether it's a medical detox, whatever. Whatever we get is going to be better than what we already have. And personally, I know a lot of drug addicts and myself, we don't want to be drug addicts.
Mm.
And I just think if there's something here, and I've had a lot of personal friends of mine that are drug addicts come up to me and tell me, Donnie, if there was something here, I'd think about it.
Mm.
Which, when there's nothing here, they never thought about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, Donnie, I think some people would not argue, but say, yeah, for the sake of argument, that because we have Homewood in town, that's kind of a significant presence that sort of tries to deal with the problem. But the times that I've spent an emergency, I noticed that a lot of people that were having issues were kind of taken across the street, as it were, to the Homewood. Are you kind of saying that maybe not be the channel that we all think it is in terms of, oh, it's great we have Homewood in town? Or
actually, it's not, because Homewood is a private institution.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And they make no bones about it. You know, and
they're expanding too, so they definitely.
But a lot of drug addicts that I know are not rich. They don't have money.
Yeah,
and I just and I had to explain. Everybody thought Homewood was our detox center.
Yes, that's very true.
And you know what? I gave them an option. I even the people that didn't sign my petition gave me enough respect to let me finish what I had to say.
Mm-hmm.
And I gave them an option. And I can't believe how fast I've been doing it 5.5 months. I cannot believe the support I've gotten, which only shows me that there's a need for something.
How many signatures do you have now?
It's over 1,000.
Oh, wow. That's impressive for a...
And it's just me. And I started July 13th.
Okay.
And it was 113 degrees outside. And I stood downtown, and I'm explaining to people. And after a while, I had businesses coming up to me. You know, I'll take one of your petitions.
Oh.
Everybody. And last week, especially last week, last Tuesday, I got a personal call from the chief of police.
Oh, wow.
Asking me about my petition.
Okay.
So it's moving on up the ranks, yeah.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, it's like he personally called me.
Right. So, I mean, you've become sort of a serious player in this.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit what a detox center would do, because I think that a lot of people have been interested in the consumption site at the CHC and how there's multiple services intersecting there in terms of the care people can get. What would a detox center do that?
A medical detox center would be, now I've been in other detox centers in Kitchener and Owen Sound and you know, it's how do I explain this? A medical detox center is run by doctors and nurses, not just somebody sitting at the front desk.
Mm-hmm.
And withdrawals, they are what they are.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? If you can take just a little edge off it, just a little, you'd be amazed that they would want to stay maybe another day.
Mm-hmm.
And a day turns to another day, and next thing you know, people are getting better.
Mm-hmm.
And Guelph is a beautiful city. I love this city.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and from the support I have from counselors, police, it's just there's a need for something.
Mm-hmm.
And I always thought a medical detox center would be, at least it gives them a fighting chance. Because
mm-hmm.
in the detox center, you can get up and walk out.
Mm.
Because you're sitting in a room. And if I can say something, at least in jail, they lock the door behind you, so you have a fighting chance.
Right.
You don't get in a detox, and nobody wants to go. I tried to go to Kitchener once. I got off the bus before it left Guelph.
Mm.
You know, it's something has to be here.
Right.
And it's... I don't know more to say. It's a necessity here.
Right.
If they want to combat this problem,
right?
Hey, this is not the all to end all.
Right.
I'm not saying that, but so, it's a foundation starting somewhere.
Sure.
And do you see it as obviously complementary to all the other services that are being
exactly.
provided, like the van
yeah.
that comes and?
Yeah. There's a for recovering addicts. Addicts will not talk to a social worker that has no idea.
Mm.
They only can go by the clinical
right.
version. But when you get in, when you first get them in there, you have guilt and shame is the worst thing.
Right.
And a lot of people suffer from that, from what they've done. Families lost, jobs lost, everything's lost.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, I don't know.
Well, let me ask you this, because one of the things I think you're addressing very well is the stigma around addiction. And I really like one of the things. I saw your video on Facebook, and one of the things I really liked is when you're saying, like, everybody is one car accident, one broken leg away.
Because
that's right. What happens is, you know, you get hurt, you're given some pain pills, and all of a sudden you're hooked and without even really appreciating that.
Yeah.
I wonder how... You are sort of managing to affect the perceptions and the stigma, because I was on Facebook after the council meeting on mm-hmm. Monday when they approved the support
yep.
for making the consumption site permanent.
Yep.
And there were a lot of negative, very negative reactions about, you know, junkies downtown. And,
yeah,
you know, how has that part of this been going? And have you been able to make an effect in terms of reducing that stigma?
Yes, I think I have, because and most of the time I hear people saying, well, they got what they deserved.
Mm.
Well, if they got what they deserved, they'd be at home being good mothers and fathers and productive members of society, voting members of society.
Right.
And it's I've always thought stigma is like day to day, you know, day by day when it's a drug addict. I think it's person by person.
Mm.
And will you ever get rid of the stigma? No, I don't believe that.
Mm.
Could you make people understand a little better? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And just inform them, give them a choice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've heard a lot of things while I was doing this, and it breaks my heart to see a city so good as Guelph
right.
have this problem that is just it's I've never seen it, and I'm from Toronto. I've never seen anything this bad.
Right.
And like I said, Guelph's a great city.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of good people in it, a lot of good places. And I think I would like for Guelph to be on the front line of combating this problem.
Mm-hmm.
But it boils down to a money thing. I get that.
Right.
But you save one life. Isn't it worth it?
Well, one would think.
One life, yeah. One would think. But, you know, success breeds success.
Right.
And one starts sobering, and then it continues, and it just stockpiles. And then people in Guelph it'll be a great city.
Well, it's not just about, you know, from what I hear you saying, it, you know, it's about showing people that there is a way out.
There is, yes.
Yeah.
And I show it. I had to tell my story, and I had to for the world to hear and read.
Right.
Because I want them to know that if I can do it,
mm-hmm.
it's possible.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've been a drug addict. I was a drug addict from the age of 10 to 45.
Right.
Yeah, it's on the video.
Right. You know,
and that's a long time. And I had to go through a lot of turmoil and a lot of different to get to where I am now.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? I think everybody should have that.
Mm-hmm.
I think at least the choice. You know, drug addicts, they're left with one choice. 100% of the time, they might make the wrong decision. Mm-hmm. But if you have a choice, it's a 50-50 chance.
Right.
You know, and when you inform people, like I said, you give them a choice, whether they're drug addicts or not.
You know? Yeah, something else that you'd mentioned in Troy Bridgman's video that he made of you there was that, and I'm not sure if this number has changed at all, but in the video, and that was a few weeks ago, I guess, you'd said that you had lost something like 8 friends in 3 months. Were all of those people from town? Were you specifically just talking about Guelph?
They were all from town.
Oh, wow. Because that's something else that I don't think, and I don't know if it's because the way our media is set up these days. Mm. You know, we hear about the ones that involve, like, say, somebody at the mall. I think everybody heard about that. But then there's this other sort of under-the-surface number, which people don't really hear about. So, I mean, we're obviously well past that crisis situation if people are dying.
Dying in the streets.
Yes, absolutely.
And, you know, the saddest part is they're only remembered for where and how they died.
Yeah.
Right.
We can't have that. As a society, we cannot have that.
Right.
Because, like I said in the video, you know, there's somebody's mother, brother, sister. There's somebody who loves them.
Right.
And we'll miss them.
Absolutely.
And I just want everybody, I just want people to have a good life. Well, at least a chance at a good life.
Yeah, right.
An option.
Right on. Unfortunately, we're out of time, but you have 1,000 signatures. I assume you want some more. So if people want to help you out and help get this petition further, how can people get in touch with you?
Okay. You can leave my phone number. I have 6 different petitions around town. And I actually have the Catholic Children's Teachers Union on board.
Okay, cool.
And the Labor Council.
Okay.
And you know, I just, just please leave my number because I have 6 different petitions all around at the DCHC, Hope House, Drop-In, Dino's, and one with the Teachers Union.
People should be able to find it very easily then.
I'm sorry?
People should be able to find it very easily around
very
town.
Very easily. At the Drop-In, at the Hope House, the GCHC.
Okay. All right. Well, Donnie, we appreciate your time and your enthusiasm for tackling this problem. Thanks so much for joining us today.
You know what, guys? Thank you for having me, and happy holidays.
You too, Donnie. You. Thanks so much.
Hey, no problem. Thank you, guys.
And so that was Donnie Hayes. He is a drug advocate. His number, I'll read it. You read it. You have the thing.
Yeah, Don's number is 226-500-0881, 226-500-0881. If you want to get in touch with him, we don't normally give people's numbers out, but he gives permission. So
it was very explicit.
Yes, best way to reach Don. He's probably on the phone. So,
And I would encourage everyone to find that Facebook video.
Yes, absolutely. Very good.
If you just search Medical Detox Center Guelph, it's like one of the first things that comes up on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
I know Facebook is not the happiest place on earth these days.
No.
But I mean, for something like this,
you can probably also find it through YouTube as well.
I think
definitely
so.
Worth checking out.
Worth checking out and hearing Donnie's story and his struggle. Speaking of struggles, although maybe not in the less serious variety.
Not checking out,
There's this controversy, or has been this controversy, about the Christmas song "Baby, It's Cold Outside," though it didn't start as a Christmas song. It has become a Christmas song in the intervening 70 years since it was first sung, but because the lyrics sounded vaguely rapey, let's say, it was pulled from several radio stations in the United States and in Canada, although some of the Canadian networks have waffled, the CBC and Bell Media among them. Scotty, this was your topic.
I suggested it just because it's everywhere, and I wrote a blog that made the rounds a few years ago. I'll publish it again. I've sort of edited it for a bit for the future about, you know, an alternate universe where another holiday becomes big, and if it was let's just say, imposed on you, what would your reaction be? So I'll leave it at that. It'll be on the Spanner book, and I'll give that address at the end. Some self-promotion there. But yeah, this you're right. CBC and others have caved because it's on their a couple of their on-demand services, which is where everything is going, except for us. We're going to be here till the bitter end. There's going to be one signal on your radio. It's going to be right. Us. We're not leaving. And maybe that weather one, the weather robot and us.
The weather robot.
We'll be the only two things left. But yeah, of course, we make a point of not playing Christmas music this time of year.
You mean Dave Duvall, the weather robot?
Dave Duvall, that's right. We'll get him. Dave Duvall's disembodied voice or something. Yeah, so Baby It's Cold Outside went from problematic to somebody doing an analysis saying, no, they're actually, you know, this is a song they used to sing at parties, or it's a song that's actually pro-women. I actually don't care. I don't want to hear it. Like, I don't want to hear any of it. I don't want to hear the consent version. I don't want to hear this version. I don't want to hear Zooey Deschanel's version. I don't want to hear any of it. That's just my own.
Oh, Zooey.
Yeah. Nothing against her directly, I guess, or Lady Gaga. And the problem with CBC's ban, I'm going to take a little shot at the CBC here, but I think they've earned it, is that, ooh, we've banned Baby It's Cold Outside. Then they proceed to talk about it every day
right. And
show all the bits. And we get to see the bit from the movie Neptune's Daughter. I looked up Neptune's Daughter with Mr. Rourke, a.k.a. Ricardo Montalban, who I didn't know was a song and dance man.
No, neither did
from
I.
From the 40s.
Yeah.
Neptune's Daughter takes place in California, and it's all about these gorgeous gals in their bathing suits. I mean, the whole movie would be probably objectionable a bit in this day and age compared to this song. But the question is, how cold does it get in California? Like, how cold are they talking about? Oh, it's 10 degrees C outside. It's cold outside.
You know,
baby, stay. We'll have some cigarettes and
you
drink.
Know, if you ever hear people who live in California, like, it's like, oh, it's a bitter 45 degrees out today. It's like, bitter 45 degrees. What is wrong with
you? Like, you've never been to the Canada, have you?
Yeah, it's like, there's no fresh oranges growing today. Is that what's going on?
But, I mean, both you and I... And you still work in retail. And the years that I worked in retail, I had one job where the Christmas all the time, they had two cassettes. It was Boney M. Christmas and Rita McNeil Christmas. That was all they had.
That's a good back-to-back.
There was no streaming. And by the end, I think that may have been part of where I went over the edge in terms of Christmas music. Because honestly, you're working these long shifts, you're knocking back a bunch of coffee, and all I hear is Mary's Boy Child by Boney M. every, 20 minutes. That could take some room. There could be some room for improvement there in terms of what stores play.
Right.
And this is the thing that I find is that, there seems to be these 12 or 14 songs you just hear over and over, whether it's Baby It's, whatever the context of the song. I mean, if it's sort of benign and monotonous like Jingle Bells. But I really object to being told to like have a good time and I should be excited because it's Christmas and I should buy more products. And then the trigger, the Pavlovian trigger, ring the bell or sing Baby It's Cold Outside and I'll buy more stuff. I don't roll like that personally, but I find the whole thing objectionable. I don't have anything against. I honestly do not have anything against Christmas at all. But if you come
except this,
if you come down on the side of like audio abuse and say this is just saturating everything, and why do I have this like visceral reaction when I hear Jingle Bell Rock or something. Maybe I should go for counseling or something. I don't know.
Like, the
or is it just me?
The controversy is what gets me because I remember maybe it was last year that this came up that the song sounded a bit rapey, and when I began hearing it on the radio because we play the radio at my day job.
You listen that much
Magic
closer, right?
Magic 106 actually. Not
shout
the name
out
drop.
To the magic,
lack of more like, but the
black magic.
When you listen to the lyrics, you go, okay, maybe this does seem kind of rapey, but when you go into the history of the thing, that for Frank Loesser and his wife Lynn Garland, when he wrote the song, and this was something they would sing at the end of their dinner parties as a way of saying like thank you and good
night. Everybody had their party trick in 1944. Everyone
had their gag.
Right?
Yeah, everyone had their bit. This was their bit. Yeah. And actually to the point where like she got ticked off when he sold it to MGM. He sold the song to MGM. It was used in Neptune's Daughter, won an Oscar actually for best original song. And you know, this was kind of their bit, and it was like this cutesy little thing.
Must have paid the bills.
And actually, a Neptune's Daughter, from what I gather, there's the this when the song's done full up with Ricardo Montalban and Esther Williams, there's actually a scene later on where it's kind of inverse with
right.
Red Skeleton and Betty Garrett, where he's like trying to get her out and she won't go.
The role reversal.
It's yeah. So once you kind of dig into these things, I mean, this is the kind of culture debate that makes people like Jordan Peterson really famous, because it's attacking this like relatively benign artifact from the deep cultural past. You know, why aren't we focusing on resolving the issue instead of trying to, you know, delete certain songs from playlists? And that's the kind of thing that gives people like Jordan Peterson cachet. I would like to focus on a couple of other things before we go. Number one is Hallelujah, the Leonard Cohen song. It's not a Christmas song.
Has that become Magic a Christmas song?
I don't know if it has. Magic 106 plays it like it is. I wish they would stop. I'm starting my own petition.
She tied you to a kitchen chair. Yeah, that sounds Christmassy.
And also, a few of my favorite things from The Sound of Music has become a Christmas song somehow. And no, it's
about,
not.
It's about consumption.
Because I went to a dinner. Yeah, maybe it is.
It is.
I went to the Christmas dinner at my mom's church, and the live act played it. And it's been on the radio. I've heard it on the radio. But this was the kicker. It was yesterday, I forgot this song had existed. But there's this song called The Christmas Shoes, which is about a boy at the mall buying a new pair of shoes for his mom with all his pennies, because his mom is sick and she might die. And the chorus goes that mommy might meet Jesus tonight.
Is it a
and
country song?
It's like new agey Christian
rock.
Oh,
okay. Because I ran out of
it's
the
like
TSC.
It's like Creed, but it sucks harder. The band is called New Song.
Oh. We got one song.
Pretty much. But I mean, I was like, it was lunchtime at the store yesterday, and this song comes on. I'm like, why are you playing this sad bastard music in the middle of Christmas?
See, you had the reaction as well that I have to Virtual Avid. Like I said, I was in the TSC in Stratford. Nothing against the TSC, because I do like it. But it was all kind of quiet. I'm like, what? This isn't the usual Christmas music. If I didn't think it could get worse, it got worse. And I was like, I can't stay here. It's like you're saying, like, this is this poor kid. It's still about consumption. It's like that. What was that Christmas story where she cut off the hair to get something, and then the comb, she got a comb, you know, you don't have hair and you don't have.
Right.
I suppose I should have looked that up before the show, but it's that same thing. It's like, I'm going to make this sacrifice for Christmas so you'll be happy, but in actual fact, it's probably going to make things worse. And pennies. What are pennies? It must be American.
Great
right?
point.
What's,
yeah,
a,
no,
what's a penny of anymore?
Right. Well, I think it's from like 2000, 2001. Yeah. But, I mean, the whole banning of the songs. I remember after 9/11 when they like had a list of. And one of the songs on the list was Afro Man. Because I Got High.
Oh.
Which is a song about a guy who's like a lazy, lethargic, just like going nowhere with his life because he's getting high constantly.
That was banned because of 9/11?
Well, it wasn't like banned per se, but it was just like on delisted. One of the, like Clear Channel put out a list of like 100, 200 songs that said like, we can't play this in the wake of events, or we recommend you don't play these in the wake of events. Of course, one of the things on that list was all Rage Against the Machine songs.
Sure. But Baby It's Cold Outside lives on, right? Because it does.
Well, so does Rage Against the Machine.
But this is my argument. It's like, okay, get the Top of the Pops from 1949. Tell me how much of that you would listen to. I know the top song of that year roundabout was Ghost Riders in the Sky, which I think is still a good song. But the rest was like, I have no idea what that is. There's a reason why certain things are left to time.
Right.
And I think I kind of wish that people, I would still probably wouldn't particularly like it, but can you guys come up with some new stuff? Like, can somebody write
the
song that's going to.
Well, The Christmas Shoes was new.
Well, yeah, no, but I mean new, but just somehow like hits a certain bar, because it's not good. And stop beating people over the head with it. If somebody would come up with an hour or two of shopping, I know that Target in the States supposedly still doesn't play Christmas music. If you could come up with a period where you can walk around and not be, you know, sonically beaten over the head with this music, yeah, that might really work, you know?
Well, good luck with that.
Yeah, I'm gonna work on that. I'm gonna start a petition. There are other more important petitions in town.
So, right. Yes. Well, we're of course coming to the year end for everyone, but for our show as well. We're going to have Rodrigo Galler on the show next week. He's the new Ward 2 city councilor. He'll be here for a half hour chat. A week after that, on December 27th, that will be our annual political movie show. And then the week after that, on January 2nd, will be our annual award show. So you have that to look forward to here on the show. You can stay connected to us at opensourcesguelph.com, Open Sources Newswire on Facebook, at @OS_Guelph on Twitter. And of course, you can find this episode and past episodes of the show on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or through iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. I can be heard or thread or whatever on Twitter at M.A. Donaldson. And then on my Guelph Politico website, guelphpolitico.ca. I was confused because I was trying to read. But anyway, go on. Where can people
find
you?
Where am I? Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I blog at spannerbook.wordpress.com. There'll be a thing. It's a bit of a rerun, but I'm not going to rewrite it.
What's a rerun?
Can you rerun a blog? What's a rerun? Well, back in 1949, a rerun was something that you watched
about reruns.
Again on the television. Let's
DJ
go.
Sounds Good to Me is here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We're back here next Thursday with more Open Sources at 5 p.m., and we will see you then. Thank you.